Welcome to the Science and Spirituality Podcast, where we dive deep into universal spiritual principles and ground them in modern science. My name is Chris Carton.
And my name is Kevin Carton, and we are committed to simplifying the spiritual side of success for you with easy-to-understand scientific research so you can walk away with practical tools to create radical transformations in your life. Let's get started. Welcome to another episode of the Science and Spirituality Podcast. Kevin Carton here, and I'm here alone again, on my own again. Welcome to another episode of the Science and Spirituality Podcast. I am your host for now, Kevin Carton, while my brother Chris is still taking his break. And so I'm here to share some ideas with you from a question that was sent to us on our Instagram, Science and Spirituality Podcast, by Mitchell. And we're answering this whole question in a whole episode. So thank you, Mitchell, for your question, for your insight. And let's get into it. So I want to read his message first so that you have a good understanding of what we'll be talking about here, about how we blend the two worlds of our spirit or our soul and systems in this human experience. So Mitchell writes us, good afternoon, Carton brothers. While meditating this morning, I was flooded with a desire to share the importance of incorporating spirituality within the context of systems philosophy, more or less. We live in a sea of systems, education, capitalism, caste, oh my, and very few have the intent to grow one's soul. Yet they are nearly unavoidable. Navigating the rigid structures that dictate the short-term course of humanity while living as an untethered soul is such an energetically draining and confusing paradox of existence. So it wasn't so much of a question, more of just he was asking us to speak on this topic. And so I have the privilege of speaking on this topic my own. I'm sure my brother Chris would have some amazing things to say, which I wish he was here, but we're still sending him full love, light, healing, understanding, clarity for himself and his journey of self-discovery. So here sharing my insights. So Mitchell puts it in a really good way. It's a paradox of existence. I freaking love the word paradox. I often say that when we get into the world of spirituality and understanding ourselves as a soul, living in this human experience, you have to be willing to walk the fine line of paradox, or the, I call it the middle path. I sometimes even abbreviate it as the M path. It's literally the letter M. Empath, but it also is a good play on words, because I think those who are called to live in this way of the empath are also literal empaths, spelt E-M-P-A-T-H. So being an empath, meaning you can really pick up on someone's thoughts, feelings, emotions, energy. Because I believe I am. And I know many who identify as like living in this paradoxical way of life, identify as being an empath. But so let's talk about it. How to navigate this? Because I agree with Mitchell that these systems are unavoidable, or nearly unavoidable. And I want to start actually going back of some history here, generalized history. I'm not a history buff and not going to give you specific dates of when things happened. But in general, if you look back at our history as humans, we have been the ones, obsessed may not be the word, but highly interested in creating systems. And unfortunately, for much of the long-standing systems in the world, they've been oppressive, and that gives systems a bad name. But, and so in terms of systems and us living in systems as a soul, it can absolutely feel crushing, because many of the systems that have stood the test of time are totalitarian. They are not for the growth of the soul, as Mitchell put it. It's not for our highest expression. However, it got us here. It got us to where we are now. And for better or for worse, honestly, for many times worse, but promise you there's a light to this. There's a positive view, a positive outlook that we can take on this, or an optimistic viewpoint. And that's the one that I'm encouraging, because it could be very easy to get very pessimistic when we talk about systems and how we as souls live in them. But so that's a little bit of history. It's like, we've been so interested in creating them, but why? Let's talk about why. So to throw aside for a moment the obvious egoic need for power, I think on a deeper level, systems serve humanity. We naturally create systems because it helps us. Now, again, power or ego or control, that's a whole different conversation. But if we imagine that, let's say that someone has the not only a good intent, but actually carries through with that intent and actually creates a system that actually is supportive for all. That system, for whatever it may be, I know I'm generalizing here, it is helpful because it helps us live in a more easeful, comforting, time-freeing way. In fact, even energy-saving way. That's why systems exist in the first place. Like, for example, like a very basic example of this, agricultural systems were created. I know some time ago now, but even to this day, that's the primary way in which we grow our food. Like, we would not be able to grow as a society, as a species, to 8+ billion humans if we didn't have agricultural systems in place. Meaning, I'm forgetting the exact term, but I know there's a specific term for irrigation. There we go. That's what comes to mind. The irrigation system. And actually, again, I'm not that great with history, so I'm going to lean on Google to tell me the answer. Irrigation system invention, like time, 6000 BC. It's been a while. I knew it. But the earliest known systems of irrigation originated in Egypt and Mesopotamia in 6000 BC. That is according to Optima.inc. Although I might want to find a better source of that, but it's the first one that popped up on Google. Some even say 600 BC. I don't know, but still thousands of years, right? Let's at least agree on that. I'm not trying to get into an argument on history, because that's not what this podcast is about. But irrigation systems, even just taking that example, that's a really good system. It's helpful. And in fact, it's actually soul serving in a way, because it allowed us to have a greater yield of crop so that we can nourish ourselves more frequently, more fully, with more nutrient dense foods, support a society as it grows, and then free up time. And guess what we do with our time when it's freed up? I mean, maybe not in this modern world, like there's an epidemic of people wasting time. But let's look back thousands of years ago. With that extra time, that gave us as human beings the time to really dive deeper within ourselves, to discover ourselves as who we really are as souls. So at its best, I really believe that systems are created for the growth of a soul. It's just that it's gotten, the word I'm coming up with in my mind right now is polluted, diluted even. And I think it's because the systems that we've created in our world were, again, like for many of them, were created for control and power, unfortunately, which we definitely want to do away with those that are oppressing anyone of people, regardless of their age, gender, sex, religion, view on the world, perception, ability, like in their physical body, like all of these things. If it's oppressive, it's not working. It's not helpful. But again, we've gotten here, as in the systems are created for helping, I think most of the time. But when it comes to systems like Mitchell, you mentioned education, capitalism, caste, like, yeah, the ones you mentioned, yeah, definitely not that great. But actually let's take education for an example, because that's a really good one. That's a system that most of us in the modern world have been put through. And heck, even if you've been homeschooled, that's still a system that you go through. You know, there's a system of education that maybe a caregiver, a parent, a grandparent, a family member put you through. That still is a system. And it's really just a passing down of information to make life easier or make life more understanding so that, again, we can have more opportunity in life. So in many ways, systems are beauty. There's beauty in systems. And I think that's where we can reconcile the paradox. And I think it's difficult. I think it's more challenging than ever for us now, because as we are in a mass awakening of awareness, of spirituality, systems have not been more oppressive. The systems have been more oppressive than ever. That can be argued. I 100% agree. But I think it's very clear, at least, like, it's so many systems are not working for people and that they need to change, or at least change, but maybe even need to be dissolved and reinvented. But that systems are around, I don't know if that will ever change, because I think that's just part of our human experience, that there's a need for that, so that we can support each other, help each other, actually pass on information, pass on energy, pass on understanding that can then benefit the next generations to come and their own soul's growth, their own soul development. I mean, I think that's why we chose to be here at this time in human history on planet Earth. I believe we chose as souls to come into this human experience, to incarnate, to bring more light, to shed light on concepts like this. But how we navigate that, like I said, there's a reconciliation that can happen. And part of that reconciliation is taking this optimistic viewpoint that, yes, there's a lot that is wrong in our world and the systems that are in place, but to look at the good, that there is a lot of good that has come from certain systems, certain ones. Hear me. Like, I'm not saying all systems have good in it. Some systems really do need to change and just be completely dissolved and let go of. So how we navigate that, though, is, like I said, the reconciliation. And to clarify or to re-highlight that, it's to take this optimistic viewpoint that systems aren't the problem. It's how we are bringing soul into those systems. Like, actually, Mitchell actually mentioned that. It's like, how do we incorporate spirituality in the context of systems? I think that's what we're seeing as we're growing as souls, as we're growing in awareness, as we're growing as spiritual beings. We're getting more familiar with how we can actually live from the truth of our nature, who we really are, in this human experience. And that, shoot, that's not easy. I mean, the systems that are developed for the growth of a soul, and many of them we call religion, but even just spiritual paths, you may say, it's not even like a set up religion. There's still systems. Those systems are, I mean, they're directly to help us be more, actually, it's probably, I can end the sentence there, period. But to be more of who we really are in this human experience. But I think the challenge with that is that it's a eternal process. Let me expand on what I mean by that. There's a concept, a term called the long view that is extremely helpful here. If we take the long view of life itself, growth of this and soul development have been winning in the universe. If you look at, let's look at 100,000 years, 1,000,000 years of development of life. And I like to take the scientific approach of, like, looking back, dating back, you know, in our Earth's history, and what we see is development of beings on this planet. I mean, shoot, it started off with a one-celled organism. Very low capacity for a soul to be expressed through that exact system, right? I wasn't sure if you were able to hear that, but my neighbor started to suck up some leaves as there's a bunch of leaves falling in our front yard. Anyway. But yeah, so it all started with that one-celled organism. Souls, you know, there's not much expression a soul can have in a one-celled organism. But life has been winning. the soul has been winning, to expand, to grow, to have more capacity to be full, more fully itself, the soul, in a being as it's grown, as it's become more multicellular organisms, and then so on and so forth to, you know, human beings, but we can even look at other animals on our planet that are extremely intelligent, like dolphins, elephants. You know, like what I'm pointing at here is the evolutionary process of beings in general. It's been expanding, it's been growing, but that's a long, long view, and it's not normal for us humans to consistently live from that kind of paradigm of looking at, you know, thousands of years of development, so that, you know, when we look at the current systems, and yes, they're not being as allowing for a soul to be its full self, you know, we're on our way. There's a growth, there's an expression of life that is happening more and more in life in general, that, like I said, has been winning. It's the most positive, optimistic outlook I can ever take. And, you know, I'm speaking on this, but I'm not perfect at this at all. Like, I fall into sometimes despair and even disdain and frustration with our current systems in the world, because, to be quite frank, they suck. Like, they're really not good. And so I think we can hold both. But the work then to really navigate this is to come back to the more positive, uplifting outlook, because that is really the only way that we can actually, first and foremost, be our full selves, our full soul selves in this current human experience, and allow that to grow and expand. But also to just not give up. In this case, it's binary. There's one of two choices. And of course, there's a whole gray area and, you know, many ways of looking at it, but it's one end of the extreme or the other. It's that we're going toward God, that there is growth, that there's the championing of the soul. I don't even know if that's a word, championing. In other words, the soul is winning, that who we are as souls, like, we're here to expand, to grow, to allow more of our soul expression to be seen, to be shown, to be accepted, to be here, just here, grounded. Or the other extreme is that it's hopeless. It's not working. Like, humanity's on a death path, that our species is going to extinct. So there's two ways. And, you know, especially with things going on in the world that are difficult to see and acknowledge and then work through just look around you with what's going on in the world. If you're listening to this present moment time, and shoot, it might be more true as the months go on. But it being October, 2023, just what's erupting in our world now of oppression, as well as war, killing, violence, and just a whole lot of despair of what is going on. Again, easy to get lost. But that's why, personally for myself, I do my best to come back to these eternal truths. And I'll say one other thing with this. This is, I think it's a bedrock or a foundation that you can stand on, even when it seems all is lost. And I want to tell you a story of where I got this this bedrock or this foundation from. So, Viktor Frankl, you might be familiar with his work or not, but if you are, great. If you're not, here's the story. Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist. Forget the exact which one. Back in the times of Nazi Germany, he got captured. His whole family got captured and were put in concentration camps. His entire family was killed. Yet he still held on hope that he was going to live and get out and continue on his work and helping people, and had even started to write a manuscript on toilet paper and would hide it in his literally 1-inch thin mattress so that the Nazis wouldn't find it and burn it. But eventually, after some time, they did find it. They did burn it right in front of him, stripped him naked in the courtyard. And because, you know, he's getting punished for what he was doing of having free thought. And they finally noticed that since they had taken everything from him, but they didn't realize they did not. The final thing that he had physically, the last vestige of his old life, was a thin gold wedding band on his ring finger of the left hand. And they realized they didn't take it. And so they finally took it. They demanded it of him. And he wrote about this experience. He spoke about this experience in his work, that as he was removing that ring, something was awoken in him. And that was the ability to choose the way in which he wanted to respond to this extremely inhumane act, which was systems, a certain system of oppression. They took it from him, and he touched that place within him. It awoke of, I do not need to react in hating them. Despite everything that they've done, I get the choice of whether I will hate them or not. And he chose not to. It took obviously some time, but that was the first awakening of that power. And I tell that story because, and he went on, he survived that and went on to practice his therapy, created a therapy called Logos Therapy that was extremely successful and helpful for people. Incredible man. And he wrote an entire book about not just that experience, but about his whole journey of this process of discovering this place within him. And he called it the last authentic freedom of every human being. I personally, my words would be, that's him connecting with who he is as a soul. But the book, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And it's an incredible story, sad and very just challenging even to tell and hear. But that right there is, to me, the winning of the soul. It's the soul awakening. And no matter what happens in the human experience, we get that ability to choose to not be thrown down and kept down. We get to choose to respond rather than react. And that is not easy. I'm not pretending that it is easy. And it is difficult. Just reading over your message again, Mitchell, like that you mentioned it as a draining, confusing paradox of existence. You know, again, with Viktor Frankl's story, that awakening, it sparked something in him that was like an eternal flame that kept burning. But like any flame, you have to keep giving it wood for the burn to go, for that fire to continue. So I think it's okay for us to acknowledge and even feel, go through those experiences of it being draining, confusing, even in a state of despair. Some even may call that like a dark night of the soul. But that term, actually, the dark night of the soul, comes from a work from St. John on the Cross in the 12th century. And he speaks about the dark night of the soul, or writes about it, as something that we all go through. He says, when the dark night of the soul comes, not if, when this dark night of the soul comes. And he has a certain formula he speaks to, a system to help us move through that. And one of those things is to recognize that there are gifts. There are gems of wisdom and true gifts that we can unwrap by going through that experience. But we have to walk through that dark night. We can't just sit in it. Can't pitch a tent in it. We have to continue forward, no matter how difficult it is. And so I think, to come back to the point of why I'm even speaking on this again, and Mitchell, your ask for this, is how to navigate that. I think one of the pieces to understand is, so I mentioned before about the optimism, is to come back to the optimism that we're on a growth path, that we're going toward God, that as long as we continue to come back to our soul selves and be willing to make decisions, to think from who we are as a soul, so that we can demonstrate, that we can anchor more love and more light into this world, that's our work. That's why we're here. And then the second thing is, again, going through the dark night, letting ourselves feel the despair, letting ourselves understand that it's no wonder we feel confused. It's no wonder we're drained. It's no wonder it feels so difficult, because the systems that are currently in life may not be the most expansive for who we are becoming. And that, I believe, is why we're here. And also that despair, again, why I say to feel it, it's not a bad thing. We like to make judgments on emotions and experiences based on, you know, our logical thinking and what we should or what we want, you know, because we ideally maybe we want to all live more happily, more joyfully, more in love. But these very difficult, challenging, low vibration emotions have their place. They can become like a spark to that fire, or at least kindle the fire to rekindle it or continue to fan the flames, is having that deep discontent and saying my life, or this, what's happening in my life now, is not okay. I'm not standing for this, and actually taking a stand for what you want to create, what you want to see in this world. That is of utmost importance. It's impossible to get around that. It's impossible to not go through that if we want to continue to have our soul win out over the condition of circumstance that we face as a system that might be not so uplifting for us. I'm gonna take a deep breath. I hope this is all landing for you. I imagine it is if you're sticking around to listen to more, but I'm really allowing this to be, this feels like a channeling of a message from spirit, because I don't pretend as a human that I've got all the answers. Heck, you could probably already even tell I'm not even calling out specific situations in the world, because I don't freaking know how I would even approach it. Like, I'm walking through my own human experience of not knowing, of being in the uncertainty, of having some fogginess and not even sure what's going on. Especially if we're talking about world events, that's what I'm speaking to. It's like, who do you even trust? Like, how do we know that the information that we're being given is actually valid, or there is a foundation of truth to it, especially for how manipulative a lot of systems have become, like even just news and media, for example. So anyway, I'm getting off the point, because, and that's a part of the reason why I'm not touching on these things. It's not about meant to be a political or a statement. It's meant to be this, my intention for this episode is to support you as an individual to reconnect or connect more deeply with who you are as a soul, so that you can bring that forth into your life and we can evolve the systems that have been so entrenched in our society. In fact, this actually brings up to mind, I was preparing to speak on this. Some ideas were flowing to me because, again, I've had this question from Mitchell for a little bit now, a few days. There's actually a quote from Jesus that comes to mind from, yes, it's in the Bible, but I personally have a viewpoint after being raised Christian, going to Sunday Mass for like 15 years of my life, maybe more. But then evolving beyond that to be more of a believer in universal spirituality, I've come to see that Jesus' story was more of a spiritual path rather than a religious path. In fact, I mean, back then he wasn't even under a certain religion. He was being his own teacher, and that's actually why he was crucified. But he has this great line where he says, and this is a paraphrase. I'm going to see if I can look it up. I didn't think of it until now to share it or look it up, but he's part of his teaching where he says, and again, a huge paraphrase, but that if your hand betrays you, cut it off. And it's metaphorical to say that anything that is not serving you in your life for your greatest, highest expression as a soul, to draw you closer to God, to spirit, to the infinite, to this one life, then it's not meant to be. So that's what I'm speaking about in terms of systems. They do need to evolve. But yeah, give me a second. I want to see if I can look it up. I love the internet and technology. Speaking of a system that's actually helpful and expansive, internet is, I believe, on one level, very helpful as of a system so that it can expand knowledge and that we can share information with each other much more readily. Yeah, cut off your hand. That's literally what I'm typing in. Matthew 18. Such things must come, but woe to the man through whom they come. If your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life maimed and crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into eternal fire. Whew. That's got some fire to it right there. Personally, my interpretation of that is what I shared is that if it's not helpful, it's not helping you expand as a soul over time, then it's not meant to be. That system is meant to be evolved. So to navigate that, let's recap. There's a lot that I shared, and I know a lot of macro concepts, but I want to make it more tangible, more applicable for you. That's the intention of our podcast here in Science and Spirituality. We always aim for that, so you can walk away with some action steps, some different ways of living. So we talked about being the optimist, the eternal optimist, taking the longer view of life. Second is being willing to walk through the dark. That dark night of the soul is to acknowledge and welcome, even accept that deep, dark emotion, because that pain can be a motivator. You don't want to stay motivated by pain, but it can absolutely help spark some new action, some new insight. So transform that, because I think those lower emotions, especially like despair, guilt, shame, they can be very crippling or very, it can cause you to procrastinate. And so that's the way I'll put it. But to transmute it, to be the energetic, the emotional alchemist, to transform that, to allow it to bring some more energy. Like I got to do something. That's often where we find the most change in humans in our life, is that if things become unbearable, shoot, that's when we change. That's the big change. And I think the final thing I'll share as an action step, this is a practice I've been working on for a decade now, is to connect more with who you are as a soul. There's many ways of doing that, but my favorite is a tool called Notice What You're Noticing. In other words, the psychology term is metacognition. You can look that up if you'd like. It's a very powerful practice. I personally like to turn it into a meditation where in my meditation, like 15, 20 minutes in the morning, I'll slow down my breath, focus on my body, bring myself into the present moment. If my mind wanders, I bring it back to my breath. And then for a few moments, maybe a minute or two straight, I will think the phrase, notice what I'm noticing. And what that means is to take my awareness and take a step back to be aware what I am aware of. In other words, to think about what I'm thinking about, to notice what I'm feeling, to actually reflect, to give myself some space and time to recognize and ground that I am a spiritual being having a human experience. And I know it sounds so basic to develop this ability to be so connected with your soul, to have that metacognition. Mitchell, your term was to be the untethered soul. But that is a training so that our humanness can get out of the way, so that we can recognize and understand that, yes, we're going to have thoughts, emotions, habitual actions. We're going to have these patterns in our life, but we are always more than that. And so we can literally train our brain. We use the principle of neuroplasticity in the emerging neuroscience to get our mind and body on board with this knowing, with this truth that we are not just human, we are spiritual beings, we are a soul, and we have this human experience. So it's a training. Like I said, I've been working on that for a decade. I've invested in countless coaching programs and mentorship to be able to develop that ability. It's actually the primary thing that I work with in my clients in any program that I offer as a coach, which if you're interested, shoot me an email. kevin@kevincarton.com. Be happy to have a conversation to see if we're a good fit to work together. But that practice is primary, and it's something to always come back to, so that when there is that that challenging emotion that comes up, you can transmute it, you can alchemize it, as well as then you can come back to the truth that there is an eternal optimistic point of view that we can look at the current world and systems, and that we can be the ones who will change the world, who will change the systems that are currently in place, so that we can have a more inclusive, a more expansive, a more loving, a more effective, efficient, useful systems in our world, so that it can serve every soul on this planet. That's my dream, baby. I believe it's possible, but we need many people on board for that, and us living our own unique soul's purpose for that to come true. So with that said, I will end that there. There's many different other tangents I can go on, but I'm going to let that land, and love to hear your feedback too. Been really enjoying this experience where on Spotify, if you're listening on Spotify, you can type in your feedback. There's usually a question. And this one, I'm just going to ask, what's your viewpoint on systems as a soul, and how you can live into this? Like, any tips you have, or what your experience was in listening to this and my viewpoint? Love to hear from you. And I'll put that as a question, and you can respond to that question, and I'll publish the answers. And just so you know, as you're engaging with this, unfortunately, Spotify doesn't have a way for me to respond to those answers, but I love all the answers that y'all share. I publish them. I read every single one. So thank you for sharing. Your insights are really powerful and helpful for others who are listening to these episodes. So thank you for engaging, and I'll talk with you on another episode. Peace. And that's it for today. So thanks for tuning in. We really hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. So any questions, any comments, connect with us on Instagram personally at Kevin F. Carton
or at Chris J. Carton, or our podcast or Instagram page at Science and Spirituality Podcast. And if you feel guided to, the one thing that we do ask is for you to please rate the podcast and also leave a review. This way we can reach more people, and in that way impact more lives. So with that, we'll see you on the next episode.